Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. You heard about the Trump nominee for drug czar who had to withdraw when his role in making it easier to get opioids came to light. But did you know about the nominee to regulate chemicals at the EPA who's been accused of repeatedly covering up chemical contamination? With us now on that and more is New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. I hear it's busy in the Senate today, Senator, so thanks for clearing a little time. Welcome back to WNYC.
Delighted to be on. Thanks for having me.
So you're trying to draw attention to this EPA nominee, Michael Dorson. Who is he?
Well, he's had a career helping the chemical industry to allow for greater quantities of drugs in communities, chemicals specifically. And what he's been doing is he's the expert witness in lawsuits when a community says this particular chemical is harming my family, harming our health. He'll say, oh, well, the level that is in the atmosphere is not problematic. And he keeps lowering the level and the threshold for what's harmful. And so it's highly disturbing because we have communities across New York who are dealing with tainted water. And one of the worst cases we have is obviously the fact that the Hudson River is just laden with PCBs, and we've been unable to have that cleaned up properly. The EPA is not holding the cleanup accountable. We also have issues of PFOA in upstate New York where I live, where families don't know if the levels of PFOA in their water that they've been bathing their children in, that they've been drinking, that they've been cooking in, is harmful or not. And so I opposed Dorson because he's really been part of the industry effort to not protect families from harmful chemicals.
Tell us more about this PFOA contamination in New York State. And I see in your press materials that you mentioned that Dorson himself was paid to go out and defend a safety standard for PFOA that was 2,000 times weaker than the current EPA safety standard.
Well, you've said it perfectly. And what he's done is tried to create a narrative that the water's safe. And that's what I have such a problem with. And we've lived through this. I mean, you remember after 9/11, the EPA said the air was safe. And so all those first responders rushed to the scene, finding survivors, then finding remains, staying for weeks and months, many with no protective gear at all. And now they're dying of horrible cancers. I don't need a guy like Dorson at the EPA who's going to spew information like the air is safe after 9/11. That is the problem I have. And I need justice for these families with PFOA contamination in their groundwater. for him to go out and say that a standard was safe that was 2,000 times weaker than the EPA's own internal standard just is a red flag that this guy's not going to have families back, that he's too bought and paid for by industry. And you know that there was a huge issue in West Virginia where PFOA was released into the environment by DuPont. And I think he was one of the people who had opinions in that case. Like, it's not the right person to be protecting families. His experience, his life experience, where he's chosen to put his time and effort, does not tell me that he is going to be able to protect families in New York.
I read your press release on Dorson, which compares him to the drug czar nominee as another case of Trump wanting the fox to guard the hen house. But it seems to me these stories are a little different. In the drug czar case, it looks like Trump didn't realize that the congressman pushed the bill that made it easier to sell lots of opioids. And when the media revealed it, the president dropped his support for that nominee. In this case, the president's agenda is to appoint the most aggressive environmental deregulators like Scott Pruitt, and I guess this guy, because he believes in what they've done. How would you compare the two cases, really?
I think they're directly relevant. Anytime you have the fox guarding the hen house, it is a huge problem for safety, for public safety. And we have a huge problem with both the drug industry and with the chemical industry. Both industries, unfortunately, have put profits over people's lives over and over and over again. And that's why I opposed Scott Pruitt so aggressively. When he was attorney general in Oklahoma, he sued the EPA over a dozen times and never once on behalf of human health. Every single time was to allow polluters to pollute more. And so we need so much more leadership and accountability when it comes to companies that produce products that can harm people. Because when they make the decision that it's more important to have quarterly profits and shareholder value over the health and well-being of people and communities, that is the difference between capitalism and greed. And we have to call it out, and we have to stand up against it, because it's wrong. It's morally wrong.
Senator Gillibrand, my guest on WNYC. Next topic, Puerto Rico. You're calling for a Marshall Plan, like the rebuilding of Europe that the U.S. paid for after World War II. What would that entail in this case?
A couple of things. The first thing we need to do is get rid of their debt. They have over $70 billion of debt, mostly owned by hedge funds, that bought that debt for pennies on the dollar, hoping to make lots of money in the future. And they cannot service that debt. They cannot deal with it. And people across Puerto Rico are not getting food. They're not getting clean water. They can't get the health care treatment they need. They are suffering. They are dying. We hear story after story about people who were hospitalized, who couldn't get the treatments they needed in a timely fashion, and they died. And so we need a couple of things. We need to deal with the debt, and that should be erased, and there's lots of ways to do that. We then need to fund the rebuilding of infrastructure. Most of Puerto Rico doesn't have access to electricity. If you don't have access to electricity, you can't get the health care treatments you need, you can't cook food, you can't do a lot of things that are necessary for human life. A lot of the island still doesn't have access to clean water, so we need to rebuild the water infrastructure. All the roads aren't fully cleared in the rural areas. That needs to be completed, and then you need to rebuild. So you need to rebuild a whole electric grid, a water infrastructure, and then industry. They don't have a chance of having any taxpayer base for well over a year because their three largest industries, tourism, pharmaceuticals, and agriculture, were all destroyed by the hurricanes. And so we have to allow them to rebuild their industry so people can go back to work, so they can pay their bills, so they can buy groceries at the grocery store. Right now, that's impossible for too many families.
You know, many Americans are learning for the first time that Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory and Puerto Ricans are American citizens. And they're also learning for the first time that Puerto Rico has this debt crisis that preceded the storm and that President Trump keeps highlighting as sort of their own fault. Their infrastructure was vulnerable to this hurricane. How do you see the debt crisis, and what is the responsibility of other American taxpayers to bail them out that the president is ginning up resentment over?
Well, one of the biggest sins of Washington is that decades ago it passed a law that said the territories were not eligible for bankruptcy like any other state is. And so that law has been crippling to Puerto Rico, because if any state had the fiscal crisis that Puerto Rico does, or any city had the fiscal crisis that Puerto Rico does, they would be declaring bankruptcy, and there'd be a process to deal with creditors, to get rid of debt so they can start over. Congress itself is the one who created this problem. And so I think the federal government needs to be doing a lot more. It is immoral to not act and to not get them on their feet again. The bottom line is this. The U.S. government bailed out Wall Street. If every Wall Street banker could easily take a bailout when they wanted it and when they needed it, we should be helping everyday American citizens struggling to recover from a natural disaster. It's just incomprehensible that there is a moral judgment being laid on Puerto Rico for the status they're in because of U.S. laws that were wrongheaded from the beginning and have harmed them for decades.
I gather today's the day that the bipartisan health care compromise is being introduced in the Senate by Democrat Patty Murray and Republican Lamar Alexander. Do you support it?
I gotta say, I have concerns because it's such a short-term fix. The work they've done is outstanding. They've come together trying to find bipartisan solutions, but all it does is continue subsidies for the next 2 years. It's not a long-term fix, and so it's gonna create problems within the healthcare industry. So I have concerns about it. I'm gonna look at it a little more. I'm gonna talk to New Yorkers, a lot of our hospitals and care providers, and see what the ultimate effect of this is going to be, but it's not a great solution. I think there's going to be a lot of rates being raised and people not being able to afford the care that they need.
Would doing something short term be better than doing nothing. The idea of compromise is to respect those lower income workers who need subsidies to afford their insurance premiums, as you know, by keeping those subsidies, and respect the Republicans' desire for more people to be able to buy lower cost policies that have fewer benefits. That might be a lot of younger and healthier people. So why doesn't that, more obviously for you, form the basis of a meaningful starting point, and maybe not even just about health insurance, but also cracking the taboo around compromise and bipartisanship that has made it a scandal to do business across the aisle?
Well, there's nothing wrong with bipartisanship, and in fact, you can't pass a law if you don't start from there. And so that's how I look at my day job every day, that I have to work on bipartisan solutions to real problems. I just don't know that this is the best deal we can get. I don't know if we spent another month or months working on a better outcome, we couldn't do better. If this is the best we can get, I'll certainly look at it, and I will consider something over nothing. But I'm just worried that this is not good enough, and there's going to be a lot of damage done in New York. And so I really want to have that conversation with New Yorkers and have a national conversation about whether this is the way we want to go. The bottom line is Trump has created this crisis from thin air, and the GOP should be working with Dems to undo it. We should fight to keep the premiums from spiking, but we shouldn't have to compromise consumer protections to do it. And that's really where we are. And these compromises are worrisome.
Last thing, you've been a leader on the issue of policy responses to sexual harassment and sexual assault, such as in the military. Do you see any policy responses to the Harvey Weinstein revelations and the Me Too movement that has sprung up since, among other women, regarding other bosses and other workplaces? Is there an additional policy response that's needed?
I think there's a lot of policy responses that are needed. This is a national urgent crisis that we need to talk about far more holistically than just one predator. I think it's really important that the Me Too campaign has been so effective, because basically men and women across the country are telling their stories. And when you tell a story as a survivor about what happened to you and how horrible it is, it really affects the ability of other survivors to come forward as well. And it's really important that men and women stand up and tell their stories so people understand this isn't about one predator. It's about the fact that there is institutions that continually protect predators who are powerful, and that's just the truth of the matter. Chronically undermining the value of women in society. So whether it's a problem in Hollywood, whether it's a problem on a college campus or in the military or in society with any boss, it's something we need to root out and we need to fix. And so I would love my colleagues to join me in a conversation about how to take on sexual violence in each of these areas. And one place we can start is on a college campus. We have a strong bipartisan bill to have a nationwide survey to say, what are the climates actually like on college campuses? Are people being assaulted? If so, are they reporting? If not, why not? What's wrong with the college system that people will not come forward to report that kind of crime? And so I invite them to work on that with me. I invite them to work on with me on military sexual assault. There was just an amazing op-ed by a survivor out of the armed forces where she told her story, and she's calling on Congress and people to support changing the criminal justice system within the military along the lines of the bill that I have on a bipartisan basis with more than half of the Senate voting on twice. In favor of it, to take the decision making about whether a sexual assault has been committed in the military out of the hands of a commander and giving it to trained military prosecutors who don't have skin in the game and don't necessarily have any bias and are actually trained to do the job. And so those kinds of things need to change across the board. We talked about this, the last scandal with the NFL, and that we needed more accountability and transparency. But it really starts with valuing women and hearing them and listening to them and believing them and being able to speak out. And I think that's why the Me Too campaign is so powerful.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.